The Womanity Project. Let's talk about gender. Genders. Gender? Gender equality. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Womanity Project Live. I'm Aurélie Harp, and you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Last season, we interviewed Tania Catan, a creative instigator, award-winning author of My One Night Stand with Cancer, keynote speaker, speaking coach, and the inventor of the famous worldwide campaign, It Was Never a Dress. And Tania nominated Angela Ellsworth. Let's listen to what she has to say about Angela.
I'm going to recommend Angela Ellsworth because she's, yes, my lady friend. So she is an artist of note, and she also started the Museum of Walking. And you'll want to know about that because Ooh. It's both an actual space and a conceptual space. And she's a genius human, and I have the luxury of seeing her most days of the week. Wow. Yeah, so that's my nominee. Bam!
So, today, our guest is Angela Ellsworth, a multidisciplinary artist traversing disciplines of drawing, sculpture, installation, video, and performance. And she's the co-founder of the Museum of Walking. She's interested in art merging with everyday life and public and private experiences colliding in unexpected space.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Very well today.
Good. Can you tell us where you're calling from today?
I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona. First of all, I'd like to say that message from Tania was so sweet. I hadn't heard that, and it was a very nice way to start.
So, Angela, you started the Museum of Walking, the MAW.
I have a silly walk, and I'd like to obtain a government grant to help me develop it.
I see. May I see your silly walk?
Yes, certainly, yes.
That's it, is it?
Yes, that's it, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not particularly silly, is it?
This was just an extract of the Monty Python sketch called The Ministry of Silly Walks. So now more seriously, Angela, can you tell us about the Museum of Walking?
The Museum of Walking it started as a very small conceptual project. I started it with another artist by the name of Stephen Yazzie. And it's in 120 square feet. Mm-hmm. And essentially, it's an educational and experiential resource center committed to people, land, action, and site. So many of our programs, it's basically around walking as it relates to contemporary art, because there are a lot of dancers and artists that are thinking about or participating in walking in their art practice. So we have programs off-site. We walk in the Sonoran Desert, sometimes in silence. We sometimes are led by people who know something in particular about an urban environment in the city. And sometimes we go all the way down to the border to do walks in politically charged sites. So,
wow. So basically the aim of it is, on one side, to do some action. And on the other side, what does it bring to... for anybody to walk?
Well, I think that what it does for me is raise lots of questions about who walks, who has to walk, who can't walk, and who doesn't choose to walk. So it's the first project I've ever done where people can come to the conversation from all different areas of research or life, and it does relate to the everyday, how we move through space as people. It's political as well. I mean, I come from the background that the personal is political. So walking is also, the Museum of Walking is in one of the least walkable cities in the United States. We are the only Museum of Walking in the U.S. There is one in the U.K., but we are in Phoenix has been voted as one of the least walkable cities. So it feels important to have that conversation and action happening here. I used to engage my body more in marches and protests And now I'm interested in ways that everyone can come to a space and collectively walk, but it's not with one particular goal. It's basically when there are 1,000 of us, I'm working on 1,000 person silent walk in a dried up riverbed. And when we walk in silence, we actually hear each other and understand each other in a new way. And I'm very interested in how that opens up the space for everyone to engage with, and how we listen to each other in a new way.
We hear and understand each other in a new way. It reminded me of John Francis, an American environmentalist nicknamed the Planet Walker, traveling the globe by foot and sail with a silent message of environmental respect. Let's listen to what he has to say in this TED Talk he gave in 2008.
Well, I want to take you on this journey, and the journey, I believe, is a metaphor for all of our journeys. And so even though this one is a kind of unusual, I want you to think about your own journey. My journey began in 1971 when I witnessed two oil tankers collide beneath the Golden Gate, and 500,000 gallons of oil spilled into the bay. It disturbed me so much that I decided that I was going to give up riding and driving in motorized vehicles. That's a big thing in California. And it was a big thing in my little community of Point Reyes Station in Inverness, California, because there was only about maybe 350 people there in the winter. This was back in 71 now. And so when I came in and I started walking around, people just knew what was going on. And people would drive up next to me and say, "John, what are you doing?" And I'd say, "Well, I'm walking for the environment." And they said, "No, you're walking to make us look bad, right? You're walking to make us feel bad." And maybe there was some truth to that, because I thought that if I started walking, everyone would, you know, follow. Because of the oil, everybody talked about the pollution. And so I argued with people about that. I argued and I argued. On my 27th birthday, I decided, because I argued so much and I talked so much, you see, that I was going to stop speaking for just one day, to give it a rest. And so I did. I got up in the morning and I didn't say a word. And I have to tell you, it was a very moving experience, because for the first time, I began listening in a long time. And what I heard, it kind of disturbed me, because what I used to do when I thought I was listening was I would listen just enough to hear what people had to say and think that I knew what they were going to say. And so I stopped listening, and in my mind, I just kind of raced ahead and thought of what I was going to say back while they were still finishing up. And then I would launch in. Well, that just ended communication. So on this first day, I actually listened, and it was very sad for me, because I realized that for those many years, I had not been learning. I was 27. I thought I knew everything. I didn't. And it's one of those things that came out of the silence, the listening to each other. Really very important. We need to listen to each other. Well, my journey kept going on. I knew I needed to change, because it would be the only way that I could be here today. And I know that a lot of times we find ourselves in this wonderful place where we've gotten to, but there's another place for us to go. And we kind of have to leave behind the security of who we've become and go to the place for who we are becoming. And so I want to encourage you to go to that next place, to let yourself out of any prison that you might find yourself in, as comfortable as it may be, because We have to do something now. We have to change now. As our former vice president said, we have to become activists. And how we treat each other is really how we're going to treat the environment. So I want to thank you for being here. And I want to end this in 5 seconds of silence. Thank you.
Do you think it's something like walking or and then being in silence? Is it something we forgot about or that is sort of new?
Walking has been a part of my own art practice for a long time. It doesn't necessarily manifest in a visual way all the time, but it is a part of like a preparing to make work, to go walk and be in the world and feel my body, and it does impact creativity for sure. I've known that in a non-scientific way for a long time, and how my partner also, when she's writing and she's working on something and she can't figure it out, she goes for a walk. So there's a long history of philosophers walking back and forth and walking long distances to sort of unleash new thought or as a way of thinking. And there are also artists that actually go on walks and then make work from that actual walk. And now there's actually scientific evidence. Stanford just came out with a report that walking indeed does impact creativity.
Creative thinking improves while a person is walking and shortly thereafter. According to a study co-authored by Marilee Opezzo, a Stanford doctoral graduate in educational psychology, and Daniel Schwartz, a professor at Stanford Graduate School of Education, the study found that walking indoors or outdoors similarly boosted creative inspiration. The act of walking itself, and not the environment, was the main factor. Across the board, creativity levels were constantly and significantly higher for those walking compared to those sitting.
So we're now going to take a little break and leave you with one of Angela's Paris songs, which is "These Boots Are Made for Walking" by Nancy Sinatra. And before playing the song, I would like to hear, Angela, why did you choose that song?
Well, I felt I needed a power song that related to the Museum of Walking, and that's a big one. I also grew up loving to wear boots, and my mom would say that I would sleep in my boots, these little go-go boots. When I was little, they were probably rubber boots, but I thought they were probably go-go boots. And I would sleep with them because I loved my boots so much.
Grazie. Ciao. You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't been a messin', and now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. My boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. My boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.
And we're back. You're listening to The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn.
We always ask our guests to introduce themselves. So, Angela, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? Where are you from?
So, I was raised in Salt Lake City, Utah, in a very strict Mormon household. And I was raised singing songs about my ancestors walking thousands of miles across the U.S. To settle land, basically occupy land that was not theirs, in the West. So I grew up singing these songs about walking and children walking and walking and walking, and knowing that I had these female ancestors that walked thousands of miles in long skirts and had babies as they were moving across the plain. So walking has been a big part of my life, I think, for a long time.
Angela is a descendant of Lorenzo Snow and was raised as a Mormon. Lorenzo Snow was an American religious leader who served as the fifth president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, LDS Church, from 1898 to his death. In 1831, Joseph Smith, the Latter-day Saint prophet, took up residence in Hiram, Ohio, 4 miles from the Snow farm. The Snow family was Baptist, but soon took a strong interest in the new religious movement. Snow recorded that he heard the Book of Mormon being read aloud in his home in Mantua and met Smith at Hiram in 1831. In June 1836, Snow was baptized by John F. Boynton, a member of the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. Snow accepted the principle of plural marriage and took 2 wives. Later, he took 7 more. Snow was the last president of the LDS Church in the 19th century and the first in the 20th. Some of Angela's work is related to that upbringing.
A single bonnet, which is a project that I've been working on for a number of years, which is to create a pioneer bonnet to stand in for each of the wives of Joseph Smith, who founded the Mormon Church and had 35 wives. So I'm on wife 22 right now. Although I'm not a practicing Mormon now, I'm very interested in that history. I'm interested in specifically polygamy, the practice of polygamy, and how that connects to queer culture and non-heteronormative relationships now that we states seem to be struggling over, gay marriage specifically. But within that construct, within that very patriarchal construct, I'm interested in reimagining a group of the women and creating their own sort of community in a sense.
Looking for a home, a place to call our own, a place to call our own. Looking for a place, is this the place? Hey! Because of all your other wives, they invite me into your home.
They tell me that I'm not alone. Then they invite me to eat family style. Oh, gee, what have I done? I think I am a lesbian. Hey, wait, who are those guys? Snarl and scream, it's the FBI. I scream, grab the year supply. Stevie grins, that'll take a while. There's no time to stick around. Let's leave this crappy calm down. I know you think it's girls' night out, that all your wives are so devout. But Motel 6 knows it's not just a phase.
Where I was raised, and the Plural Wife Project does come out of my history and my sort of religious background.
Can you tell us more about this project?
The Plural Wife Project comes out of the fact that I have polygamist ancestors on both sides of my family. And so growing up, knowing that there were many wives married to one particular man was something that wasn't talked about too much. Although we knew that that existed, I grew up with just a one father, one mother. But knowing that there were these histories where there were many women, but all the women outside the first wife were deemed illegal or somewhat invisible. So later on, I got interested in the number of wives married to one woman and how that is essentially a community of women raising each other's children, and it is a sort of support system in a sense. Now, when I started making work about sister wives, I was thinking about this group of women with a lot of power and mystical qualities outside of a patriarchal construct. So I reimagined them outside of a compound led by a man and his rules, and what would happen, you know, what's the possibility of a group of women together creating home and family and creative energy on their own. And so that's the project. And, you know, it actually relates to who I am in the world. I'm a queer woman. I'm married to a woman. And so that sort of non-heteronormative history of my ancestors also runs parallel to my queerness now. So it was a way for me to sort of join hands with a history that I ran far away from and to kind of look back again and see how it in some ways was a little bit similar to my non-heteronormative relationship.
You've been listening to the Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn. And so we really, really want to thank you, Angela, for participating and for your vulnerability, honesty, creativity, walk with us. So thank you. I'm going to continue saying you can like us and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Womanity Project. You can support us and sponsor us on our page, radiofreebrooklyn.com/thewomanityproject. And you can listen to all our episodes on audioboom.com/womanityproject. So thank you. special thanks to Tania Catan, to Lizzie Axtet, our music designer, and of course to Radio Free Brooklyn. Tune in next week, The Womanity Project on Radio Free Brooklyn, every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. And dear listener, we are airing one of your Paris songs. This one has been submitted by Guillaume Blay in Paris, and it's Angela by Science Super Crew. And it's as well a little clin d'œil, your ink to Angela today. So here we go, and thank you so much, Angela.